Hello, and welcome once again to another episode of Exiting the Cave Short Reads. We continue with Boethius's The Consolation of Philosophy this week. We've finally arrived at the summation of the case against false happiness. Philosophy ends her case with a brief bullet point recap, and a verse to remind us not to spend our lives looking for things where they cannot be found. Let's listen in. It is beyond doubt, then, that these paths do not lead to happiness. They cannot guide anyone to the promised goal. Now, I will very briefly show what serious evils are involved in following them. Just consider, is it thy endeavor to heap up money? Why, thou must wrest it from its present possessor. Art thou minded to put on the splendor of official dignity? Thou must beg from those who have the giving of it. Thou who covetest to outvie others in honor must lower thyself to the humble posture of petition. Dost thou long for power? Thou must face perils, for thou wilt be at the mercy of thy subjects' plots. Is glory thy aim? Thou art lured on through all manner of hardships, and there is an end to thy peace of mind. Art fain to lead a life of pleasure? Yet who does not scorn and condemn one who is the slave of the weakest and vilest of things, the body? Again, on how slight and perishable a possession do they rely who set before themselves bodily excellences? Can ye ever surpass the elephant in bulk or the bull in strength? Can ye excel the tiger in swiftness? Look upon the infinitude, the solidity, the swift motion of the heavens, and for once cease to admire things mean and worthless. And yet the heavens are not so much to be admired on this account as for the reason which guides them. Then, how transient is the luster of beauty! How soon gone, more fleeting than the fading bloom of spring flowers! And yet if, as Aristotle says, men should see with the eyes of Lynceus, so that their sight might pierce through obstructions, would not the body of Alcibiades, so gloriously fair and outward-seeming, appear altogether loathsome when all its inward parts lay open to view? Therefore, it is not thy own nature that makes thee seem beautiful, but the weakness of the eyes that see thee. Yet prize as unduly as ye will that body's excellences, so long as ye know that this that ye admire, whatever its worth, can be dissolved away by the feeble flame of a 3 days fever. From all which considerations we may conclude as a whole that these things which cannot make good the advantages they promise, which are never made perfect by the assemblage of all good things, these neither lead as byways to happiness, nor themselves make men completely happy. Alas, how wide astray doth ignorance these wretched mortals lead from truth's own way, for not on leafy stems do ye within the green wood look for gold, nor strip the vine for gems. Your nets ye do not spread upon the hilltops, that the groaning board with fish be furnished. If ye are fain to chase the bounding goat, ye sweep not in vain search the ocean's ruffled face. The sea's far depths they know, each hidden nook wherein the waves o'erwash the pearl as white as snow, where lurks the Tyrian shell, where fish and prickly urchins do abound, all this they know full well. But not to know or care where hidden lies the good all hearts desire, this blindness they can bear. With gaze on earth low bent, they seek for that which reacheth far beyond the starry firmament. What curse shall I call down on hearts so dull? May they the race still run for wealth and high renown. and when with much ado the false good they have grasped, ah, then too late may they discern the true. And with that final warning, Lady Philosophy brings her negative case for true happiness to an ominous close. For those who foolishly persist in seeking happiness where it cannot be found, fortune and philosophy have a cruel curse waiting for you on the other end of that. There is little left to be said about earthly happiness that Lady Philosophy hasn't already said, and that hasn't been bolstered by additional voices we've brought into this discussion. So I leave it to you, my listeners, to decide for yourselves the strength of the arguments she's offered thus far. In any case, the central feature of the negative argument is the lack of unity. All of these earthly pursuits are incomplete or imperfect forms of happiness, and as such, are worse than insufficient, they're false, because they lack the kind of indivisible wholeness a perfect form requires. My use of the word form here is intentional. In the next few episodes, Philosophy and Boethius will begin a dialogue on the nature of true happiness in the positive sense. Explicit and oblique references to the Platonic form of goodness and happiness will surface frequently. I don't want to give too much away yet, but for a preview, you might want to check out the critical analysis I just posted on the theory of forms. In any case, prepare yourselves for liftoff next week, as we're swept up by the theogony of Plato's Timaeus and delve into the perfect essence of God.